my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Episode 472 to be broadcast Wednesday, February 11th on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's out and about. If you are watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information to the show, and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. Or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Big sigh. The Biden administration had set a goal of heavy-duty pickup trucks and vans achieving 35 miles per gallon by 2035, but the Trump administration is now considering rolling that back on that rule. More on the show. And it's hard to believe whether he was serious or doubtful that he could do it, but President Trump also said that he wants to cap state gas taxes. More in the show. And on a sad note, Quality Bicycle Products, one of the largest distributors of bicycles and bicycle products in the United States, has pulled the plug on Frostbike due to the Minneapolis situation. Quality Bicycle Products President Rich Tower told industry members who had been planning to attend Frostbite later this month that the distributor has decided to cancel the event. Well, you know, lots of things going on out there in Minneapolis, so I guess it's best not to stir the pot at all. So that's what's going on. On a positive side, a coalition of more than 1,000 nonprofits, businesses, and elected officials is calling on the U.S. Congress to maintain and strengthen federal funding for walking and biking infrastructure, warning that the cuts could stall decades of progress and make the streets less safe for millions of Americans. Also on a positive side, it's Black History Month, and black cyclists who paved the way for the sport, the culture, and we will go over a little bit of that in a bit. Also on a positive side, I'm going to just say enough of the cold already. We are we have too much cold. Anyway, the best bicycle travel for sunny and warm weather right now. I've got a little highlight on that. We'll talk about that more in the show. Moving on, also remembering that, and I spoke about this last week, that February is also Heart Healthy Month. How's your heart health? Very important. Just heard from a friend who just had some heart work done. Yes, another cyclist, very accomplished cyclist with, you know, some heart stuff. But yeah, it happens. I guess we're just getting old. I don't know. I refuse to admit that. Anyway, moving on. Mechanical Minute and and bicycle tips. How to show your bike a little love this Valentine's Day. Because you know what? It's Valentine's Day coming up. Hope you have something nice planned for whoever you might plan it for. Maybe even for yourself. Showing a little TLC to the one you love this Valentine's Day. And we will get on to that more into the show. I am going to actually start going right back up here to the, we're going to go back up here and we're going to talk about the plan to roll back mileage standards. Actually, which one did I want to do first? It doesn't really matter. We'll start with this one. They're both awful. So, as you know, the very large trucks and vans and, you know, just general large vehicles that we seem to be producing on a pretty regular basis here in the United States. We have had convenience of them being able to get away with environmental murder, and they basically have been continuing to build these things, and they're gas guzzling and they're environmentally not happy at vehicles at all for the environment. But you know, there's been a plan to bring the gas mileage on these things up so that they're getting better gas mileage. And then, and that's the whole idea. Would you consider just making a smaller vehicle, please? Anyway, in a letter to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Administrator Jonathan Morrison said the administration would propose a rollback on the standards which were tightened under the Biden administration. So long to former President Biden and all the good things he was doing for transportation. And here comes the new administration with all sorts of incredibly bad ideas, especially if you ride a bicycle. So the NHTSA, National Highway Transit Safety Administration, is moving forward with the next phase of its work to reset the fuel economy program, ensuring realistic standards for heavy-duty pickups and vans that comply with the law. Not realistic. Make the vehicles smaller. Did I say this already? I think I did. I think I'm still on my rant. I am. This is my rant. Okay. So, he added, the administration is already moving to loosen the standards for passenger cars and light trucks. We're also working on parallel on a proposal to reset the heavy-duty pickup truck standards. Morrison, who's NHTSA is part of the Transportation Department, added that the unrealistic standards harm American consumers and business owners who use these commercial vehicles. There's other ways around this, folks. If you are using it truly as a commercial vehicle, then therefore there should be a different standard. How about if you're using it for your daily driver passenger car, which most people are? The number one selling vehicle in the United States right now is the Ford F-150 pickup truck. And I can almost guarantee you, by other surveys that I've seen that are out there, that less than 70% of them never see the light of day of work. They're just used for driving around in. 70% of those. Okay. And it's the number one vehicle. So the Biden administration ratcheted up fuel economy standards with the goal of making the nation's fleet of heavy-duty trucks and vans reach 35 miles per gallon in test conditions by the year 2035. That would require a 10% annual improvement for model years 2030 through 2032, and an 8% annual improvement from 2033 through 2035. Friday's announcement comes after the administration indicated in June that it wouldn't enforce the Biden-era standards. It also comes after the administration proposed to significantly loosen standards for passenger cars and light trucks. So why do I talk about this on Bicycle Talk? Because the cars are too big and they're crowding the roads, and we would like to ride our bicycles in some sort of safe and peaceful manner, and it would be super nice if the cars weren't so big that they have an incredibly hard time getting around you. And no, the answer is not to take bicycles off the road. The answer is to compromise and give the people on bicycles a proper bike lane or a safer place to ride. A protected lane would be great, and or in addition to, make the vehicles smaller. They don't need to be that big. No one's using them. Sure, contractors are using them, and they have every right to do that. And I understand that, and that's what they're great for. But these are passenger vehicles. Let's face it. These are all these SUVs and trucks. They're all passenger vehicles. So where are we going here? I don't know. Wrong direction, that's for sure. I'm going to kick that one out, and I'm going to go on to the next little piece of horrible information that's out there. And that is that the Trump administration is floating a federal cap on state gas tax rates, placing road funding at risk. Wrong, incorrect, not true. Anyway, we won't get into that. That is somewhat of a misinformation, because if you take a look at where most of, largest percentage of road improvement money comes from, it comes from federal taxes, which therefore is not from gas taxes. Those gas taxes, although, do go back to the states, and the states use them for various things. And the thing here is that the administration has often made mention of the desire to drive down the high cost of driving, both by driving down the cost of gasoline through increased domestic oil production, SPR releases, invading Venezuela, etc., and the price of car ownership by canceling the costly safety standard mandates and making car loan interest tax deductible in some cases. All sorts of things going on here. So, let's see. In an interview with the Post, Washington Post, January 26th, he talked about California's highest in the nation gasoline tax rate, 70.9 cents per gallon. That's very high. It's no question about that, including sales taxes per the Tax Foundation's reference map. And how that whenever the price of the commodity itself goes down, they just raise the taxes. So the Post article quotes Trump as saying, "I would cap it, the state gas tax rate. It's unfair." There's an extremely wide variety of state gasoline taxes across the U.S., all in addition to the 18.4 cents per gallon federal excise tax, ranging from 70.9 cents in California all the way down to 9 cents per gallon in Alaska. And there's a visual map here that shows all this. But basically what it comes down to is this is a lot of hype. Okay, I will say it is hype. It is a sad situation because a lot of these gas taxes are also put back into infrastructure development in the states. And the states get to use that money for their own infrastructure development. Guess what infrastructure development is? Protected bike lanes. You got it. That's one of them. There's a lot of other things out there too, including sidewalks, safe crossings for pedestrians, safely looking at the way roads intersect one another and making it safer for people to cross the streets in high volume areas. There's all sorts of things that go there. And that comes from the gas taxes, not from the... It goes to each individual state. So states make a consideration of what they want to charge in gas tax depending on the amount of usage they have and the amount of demand they have for making their streets safer. And there's states like California, which are definitely working really, really hard on improving their infrastructure so less people are dying on the roads. Makes sense, right? So in some states like Pennsylvania, the currently high tax rate was set by the legislature as part of a deal to spend the money on specific projects. Lowering gas tax rate would blow up the deal and unfold some of those projects. There you go. So this is a really bad idea. As we have seen many other bad ideas, this one definitely is right up there. And, you know, I got to move on to something more positive. So now we're going down to the positive side. We'll go into our next little piece right here. And I'll stop ranting for just a little bit here. And we get into the coalition of 1,000 organizations are urging Congress to protect federal funding for walking and biking, right? So a coalition of more than 1,000 nonprofits, businesses, and elected officials calling the U.S. Congress to maintain and strengthen federal funding for walking and biking infrastructure, warning that cuts could stall delays of progress and make streets less safe for millions of Americans. The appeal comes as lawmakers prepare for the next federal transportation reauthorization bill, which determines how billions of dollars are spent on roads, transit, and other mobility projects. At the center of the push is the Transportation Alternatives Program, the primary federal funding source for trails, bike lanes, sidewalks, and related infrastructure. It's critical these investments continue rather than stall the progress and that communities have all been making for decades. And this is from Bill Nesper, the executive director of the League of American Bicyclists. When we build bicycle-friendly communities, we make life better for every resident, and Congress should support funding that improves lives, expands transportation options, and reduces the dangers faced by people walking and biking on our roads. More and more sighs. So since its creation in 1981, the Transportation Alternatives Program has delivered more than $17 billion to states and communities supporting the development of connected bikeways, sidewalks, and trail networks across the country. These investments have helped create more than 42,000 miles of multi-use trails and thousands of safer street projects for pedestrians and cyclists. The coalition says that these projects are widely relied upon by communities of all sizes. Rural towns use them to improve their main streets and attract tourism. Suburban areas connect residents to schools and services, and cities to create safer commuting routes and reduce congestion. Demand for funding continues to outpace supply. Hear that? Catch that one. Demand for funding continues to outpace supply. Applications for TA grants collectively total roughly four times the amount of available funding, underscoring the popularity of walking and biking infrastructure among local government and governments and residents. Advocates emphasize that safety is the major factor behind the effort. Pedestrians and cyclists account for more than 20% of traffic deaths in the United States, and the majority of those fatalities occur on federally funded roadways. On average, 20 people are killed while walking every day. The coalition argues that continued federal investment is necessary to build protected bike lanes, sidewalks, crossings, and connected routes that reduce crashes and improve safety for all road users, including drivers. This all just makes, I guess it just makes too much sense. That's where the problem is here. Supporters also frame active transportation funding as an economic investment. Hear, hear. Walking and biking infrastructure creates construction jobs, supports tourism, strengthens local business districts, and can reduce healthcare costs by encouraging physical activity. Research cited by advocates suggests active transportation contributes tens of billions of dollars annually to the U.S. economy, with a potential for significantly greater returns as networks become more connected. When we invest in connected active transportation routes, we invest in robust regional economies and job growth, increased mobility, and new opportunities for businesses and residents. That's from Ryan Chow, president of the Rails to Trails Conservancy. The active transportation economy delivers more than $34 billion annually in a return of investment each year that dwarfs the total funding provided over the 34 years of the Transportation Alternatives Program alone. So federal funding also allows communities to integrate bike and pedestrian improvements into large road projects. For example, adding a bike lane during a road resurfacing can significantly reduce costs compared with building it later as a standalone project. What's at stake with reauthorization? The coalition is urging Congress to preserve and expand the Transportation Alternatives Program, maintain safety provisions for vulnerable road users, ensure walking and bike projects remain eligible for funding across federal transportation programs. Advocates warn that eliminating or weakening these funding streams would slow the infrastructure development, limit mobility options, and increase administrative burdens for local governments trying to build connected networks. They also stress that active transportation funding benefits a broad cross-section of Americans, including people who do not drive, families that are seeking safer routes to schools, and communities aiming to reduce congestion and improve access to jobs and services. This is I just don't know what to tell you. This is kind of a what we call here, Fran and I have also always called this a DUH moment. Yeah, duh. This just, it's obvious. This is so much, there's so much common sense going on here. It would just be ridiculous to kill programs like this. It's not going to move anything forward. It's not going to make anybody any money. It's not going to save anybody any money. And with the cost of everything that we have right now and where we're at, it's time to start paying a much closer attention to the congestion that we have in big cities and to making it more friendly for alternative transportation, i.e. bicycles. So what you can do as a supporter. Advocates say the next federal transportation bill will determine whether funding for walking and biking infrastructure continues or is scaled back for years to come. Supporters who want to see those investments protected are being encouraged to contact their members of Congress. Do you know who your members of Congress are? Hope so. Write them a little letter here and tell them how you just don't want to see this killed, that this is like really, really important. The first step is identifying your elected officials. Constituents can look up their U.S. senators and House representatives through a congressional official member directory and find contact information for the Washington offices. From there, outreach can be simple and direct. Calling a congressional office is considered one of the most effective ways to register an opinion, though emails are also widely used. Doing both increases the chances the message is logged and passed on to the lawmaker. Supporters are encouraged to reference the coalition letter calling for three core priorities in the next transportation bill. First bullet point, preserving and strengthening transportation alternatives program. Second point, maintaining and improving safety provisions for people walking and biking. Third point, keeping broad eligibility for active transportation projects across the federal transportation programs. And then personalize your message. Personalizing it can also make an impact. Advocates suggest a briefly explaining why safe places to walk and bike matter in your own community, whether it's commuting, access to school, safer streets, tourism, or public health. I am going to actually take this little section of this article and that I have been reading from you here, and I'm going to paste it onto the Facebook Bicycle Talk page, and so it will be able for you to be referenced, which includes that site that is a way to connect with your local congressperson. So there it is. Okay, I've got it. So I'll post this right underneath my show, and you guys can check that out if you want to get involved. Because if you don't get involved and you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. You heard it here first, second, third, fourth, fifth. I say it all the time. Anyway, I'm going to move on to the next thing. Let's go forward here. Okay, so we took care of that. And now because we are rolling into Valentine's Day, we're getting very close to Valentine's Day. It is today, well, this show will be on the 11th of February. That's when you'll be listening to it on the radio. And so real, real close to Valentine's Day, which is coming up that weekend. And so, you know, maybe it's time to think about, you know, doing something nice for Valentine's Day, like how to show your bike a little love this Valentine's Day. You know, Valentine's Day is just around the corner. You know what it means. It's the day of the year to put a few hours aside, spend a little extra cash, and really show some affection for the one you love. Your bicycle, of course. While the snow and ice and slush may still rest heavy on your streets in a few places, for others, the signs of spring are already starting to show. So what better time to wipe off the dirt and grime from the winter and give your bike a little TLC? Light the candles and crack open the cab salve. And we put together a handy list of easy do-it-yourself ideas to show your bicycle that you love it and what the love it deserves on Valentine's Day. I know, this is a little weird. It's a little sappy, but I went there. Draw a romantic bath. Yeah. So we're all guilty of this, and myself included, daily riding on wet winter streets and just not taking care of your bike and giving it a little bit of a bath is something that you might want to pay attention to, especially if you're crazy enough to ride this time of year and you're riding in some of the slop that's out there. Take a rag and a bucket of warm soapy water and a bristle brush or even a toothbrush and give your bicycle a sponge bath. By the way, if you're concerned about not having that old toothbrush to do this with, you can go to your local dollar store and they have enormous amounts of toothbrushes. Anyway, there's inexpensive ways to solve the problem. So you want to clean around the chains and the gears, and you want to clean around the derailleurs where the adjustment screws are and all. And wash it down real good, rinse it off real good, dry it off real good. Really, really, really important. Make sure you dry it. If you have something you can blow it with, if you've got some sort of an apparatus that you can blow it dry to get all the moisture off of it right away, that's even better. I know people that use leaf blowers. This is industrial at a bike shop, of course, and it dries them up super quick, and then you can get right onto the lubrication. So lube it all up and brighten up its spirits with a little lubrication. Everybody likes a little lube. Apply a healthy dose of lube to the freshly cleaned chain, switching through the entire range of gears as you make sure the cogs feel the love as well. Wipe off the excess lube with a rag. If you're feeling affectionate, you can also take your brake cables out and clean them and re-grease them. Not the brakes, the cables, okay? I know. I had somebody already comment on this earlier. Pay attention to its needs. Are your brake pads really nearly non-existent? Maybe you need to get some new pads put on the bike. It's that time of year. What else are you doing? You're not riding your bike that much this time of year because, it's like cold and nasty out. We had a whopping 2 degrees this morning. We have a heat wave coming in right now, so it was not below zero for the first time in a long time. Boy, this winter has been a hard one. Anyway, stop ignoring the parts on your bike that are slowly eroding under the weight of your relationship and fix the darn thing. Help it so it can help you. Maybe you have a mechanical inclination to fix everything yourself, or maybe it's time to finally bite the bullet and take it into the shop. Either way, having your bike fine-tuned in good working order will mean a much better spring for both of you. And then buy it a present. You love your bicycle and you love everything it allows you to do in your life. It works, it looks great, it has the appropriate bells and whistles you need to get through the day. Maybe it's not always about what you need, sometimes it's about what you want. Treat yourself to a little luxury and by buying your bike a present this Valentine's Day. Get that beautiful hand-painted bell you've had your eye on, the leather 8-pack holder for leather 6-pack holder, excuse me, for your frame, or maybe your saddle is just fine and but you wouldn't a more comfortable one be fantastic? After all, it's Valentine's Day for the love of your bike. All right, that's my little ha-ha ditty on Valentine's Day and taking care of your bike. I'm going to move on to the next piece that's on my list here. We have lots of things on the list here today. And as we are suffering, and I mean really suffering with this Canadian winter front that has come through and just locked in on us, and we're not in Canada, but I feel like I'm in Canada sometimes. It is cold, and we have had numerous mornings where we've had below zero weather. We had a day last weekend that the weather wasn't below zero, but the wind chill was 26 below. It's cold out, folks, and that's really not great for riding your bike. Plus, we have piles of snow everywhere. We've got narrowed roads because of it. It is not so easy to ride your bike right now where we live. Now, I know there's other places that it is, like, we went down to Florida to see Fran's mom, and, we were in Venice, Florida, and we caught the classic perfect week of all times while we were there because the other morning I looked at Venice, Florida, and it was 36 degrees. That's not warm for Venice, believe me, that is not warm. Now, on the positive side, it gets up into the 50s when it's 36 degrees there at night. And 50s would be like Miami Beach for us right now up here, because that would be like an unbelievable occurrence if we were to see that. But in the meantime, what do you think about maybe traveling on a little winter vacation and getting away from it all? Yeah, you could go to Florida. Yeah, you could go to California. Yeah, you could go to Arizona. You know, you could go to all those places. But if you're looking for really different places that you can go and maybe get a little culture too at the same time, consider Niterói, Brazil. Crossing the Guanabara Bay from the frenetic energy of Rio de Janeiro, Niterói feels almost like a secret revealed, while the Rio dazzles it with its iconic beaches and carnival spectacular. Niterói is quieter, greener, and measured in a way that makes cycling both easy and endlessly rewarding. Arrive in January or February, and the city is awash with tropical light, golden sun over turquoise water, gentle breezes off the bay, and streets alive with residents on bikes, roller skates, and casual strolls. Cyclists find themselves drawn to the Orla della Carne, a 4-kilometer coastal promenade where the Atlantic meets the city. Protected lanes hug the shoreline, offering glimpses of the Rio's skyline across the bay. Morning rides are best when the sun casts long shadows and the city awakens slowly. Midday, a stop at a cafe for some fresh coffee and light fare, ideal for stretching legs before venturing into the hills. From there, you can get up into the hills for panoramic vistas and climbing winding roads, rewarding riders with sweeping views of the day. For longer explorations, you can take a 15-minute ride to sandy stretches where the waves break gently and local surfers weave between cyclists and sunbathers. Historical sites such as Fort de Santa Cruz and add cultural texture to a ride that is at once physical, aesthetic, and cerebral. And evening rides along the waterfront when the heat softens, the local families strolling on the boardwalk. Oh, sounds great. So that sounds like a really nice thing. And there's a gorgeous picture here as I'm looking at this, but I can't show you that because this is a radio show and a podcast. And you're not going to see that. But high up in the Andes in Bogota, you can enjoy a spring-like climate year-round, and it makes it a rare city where we snowbirds can escape winter without trading snow for stifling heat. Temperatures hover between 18 and 22 centigrade. I don't have a conversion on that because I'm not that good at that. But anyway, very comfortable temperatures. The city is legendary among cyclists. Every Sunday, Ciclovia closes more than 120 kilometers of streets to cars, allowing locals to run, rollerblade, and simply pedal freely. But cycling is not confined to Sundays. Protected lanes along Carrera 7 and Cali 26 form an integrated network connecting commercial districts, parks, and residential neighborhoods. Bike share stations are ubiquitous. And locals ride in all seasons, demonstrating the bike here is more than recreation, it's daily life. So you can explore La Calendaria, that's Bogota's historical heart with its colorful colonial architecture and narrowed cobble streets. Sounds great. Let's go. And if you're running out of places to go, how about going to Brazil and going to Fortaleza? Fortaleza is an embodiment of a tropical cycling dream. Situated along Brazil's northern coast, the city offers near constant sunshine, warm temperatures in the mid to high 20s Celsius, and a coastline that seems custom made for casual scenic riding. Cyclists quickly find themselves drawn to Avenue Beira-Mar, a wide avenue that traces to the beachfront. Early morning rides offer quiet city casually coming to life with vendors setting up food stalls, joggers packing the sidewalks and surfers heading out to the waves. Wow, I never thought about South America, but, you know, or if you don't want to go that far south, you can go to Guadalajara, Mexico, which is also comes alive during the winter. Dry air, bright sun, clear skies create an environment perfectly suited to cycling. Infrastructure improvements have made protected lanes more extensive, and bike share programs make short and long trips alike seamless. Wow. Great places to go. How about Buenos Aires, Argentina? Again, another one where you're just going to get unbelievably wonderful weather and scenic points that go up into the hills. Also flat terrain, expansive parks, and growing networks of protected bike lanes. Make Buenos Aires a city designed to be explored by pedal power. Yeah, good stuff. So there you go. There's an idea. If you're, maybe that'll make you feel a little bit warmer today. Let's hope for that. And then we're going to move on to our next piece of information here. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Black History Month, because February is also not only Heart Month, but also Black History Month. And so there's a great piece of information here about Black cyclists who paved the way for the sport and culture. And we start with probably one of the most famous of all, and that's Major Taylor. And Major Taylor, there's lots and lots and lots of pictures of Major Taylor out there. He's on a fixed gear bicycle. He was a pioneer, and therefore he had to blaze his own trail. There's an amazing story that goes along with him. And I think I did a show a number of years ago just about Major Taylor, because there's so much interesting information about him. He was an icon. He was a total legend. Despite the odds, he would set world records, helped desecrate cycling, demonstrated the utility of the bicycle for military travel, advocated for sisterhood and athleticism in the outdoors. The accomplishment of these riders, almost unimaginable in the present day, demonstrate how far Black cyclists have come and how far we still have to go. So, Marshall Walter, otherwise known as Major Taylor, was the first African-American cycling legend, captivated the cycling world at the turn of the 20th century. Once referred to as the fastest man alive, Taylor dominated. Born to descendants of enslaved people in 1878 in Indianapolis, Indiana, Taylor was one of eight children. His father was a coachman for the wealthy Southard family. When his father worked for Mr. Southard, the Indianapolis, Peru, and Chicago Railroad superintendent, Taylor lived with the family, receiving a semi-formal education, and with their son, Dan, and he got his first bicycles. The Southards moved to Chicago when Taylor was about 12 years old, and he started working at the local bike shop, Hay and Willis. As a trick rider wearing a military-style uniform, many think about how that's how Taylor got the moniker Major. Not only was he skilled, Taylor had also had speed. At 14 years old, he obliterated a field of top amateur cyclists in a 10-mile race. And by 1895, he won a 75-mile road race. Such incredible feats garnered unwanted attention and death threats, of course, because we live here. Crazy. Like other African-American athletes at the time period, Taylor was often prohibited from competing because he was Black. For some events, he was smuggled into the race by a sponsor. When he was allowed to toe the line, he was denied access to hotels, public spaces reserved for whites only. Driven to succeed, and despite continued racial harassment, discrimination, and assaults, Taylor dominated the podiums stateside and overseas. Europe, he took top spot in 42 of 57 races, broke 7 world cycling records, and won multiple world and national sprint championships from 1899 to 1902, earning about $35,000 annually. That's a lot of money back then. At the end of his career, Taylor faced unfortunate circumstances. He lost most of his wealth to bad investments and the stock market crash of 1929. At 53, Taylor died in a charity ward of the Cook County Hospital and was buried in an unmarked grave. Through his life, Taylor faced unsurmountable odds, yet he prevailed and declares in his autobiography that life is too short for a man to hold bitterness in his heart. What a guy. So there are numbers of these. Maybe what I'll do is I'll run these through each week, and we can talk a little bit more about different people that are here. I will move on because I'm going to go back to, there's another woman here, and her name is Catherine Kitty, in quotes, Knox, K-N-O-X, a former bicycling pioneer and trailblazer. You know what? We'll hit that one next week, and I can tell you a little bit more about Knox and what she was all about, and we'll cover that in next week's show. That'll be fun. And this, the 25th Infantry Bicycle Corps, Buffalo soldiers from Montana to Missouri. This is interesting. In the late 19th century, the 25th Infantry Bicycle Corps, stationed at Fort Missoula, Montana, enlisted 20 black soldiers to show the feasibility of using bicycles in military operations. These black infantrymen, sometimes called the Buffalo Soldiers or Iron Riders, embarked on the great experiment, cycling 1,900 miles from Montana to Missouri. These pioneers, perpetually perceived as inferior in courage and ability, endured hostility and racism, yet they persevered and accomplished the mission. The U.S. Army 2nd Lieutenant James Moss, commanding officer for the 25th Infantry and an avid cyclist, wanted to show Army leadership that bicycles were more practical than horses for transporting the soldiers. On May 12th, 1896, the Army approved of Moss's... They approved of Moss's bicycle experiment, but allocated no funding to bring the dream to fruition. Moss contacted the A.G. Spalding Company to get bicycles for his soldiers. With the steel-frame Spalding bicycles weighing about 60 pounds fully loaded, their experiment was limited to 24 to 39 years old, weighing 140 pounds and no taller than 5'8". Each rider also carried a 10-pound rifle and a belt with 50 rounds of ammunition. Whew! On June 14th, the Buffalo soldiers embarked on their five-state journey. Before leaving Montana, they endured heavy rains that turned mud into a gumbo-like consistency along the Continental Divide. Weather conditions shifted to sleet and snow, reducing visibility to about 20 feet between Montana and Wyoming. The soldiers were forced to cross the Little Bighorn River while shouldering their bicycles. Deep sand in Nebraska, a monotonous series of hills in South Dakota, oppressive heat and illness from drinking alkaline water made the arduous trip almost unsustainable. When the soldiers stopped to rest, the townspeople along the route were almost as challenging as the weather. The Kansas City Journal reported that when away from the railroad, the people were inhospitable to the soldiers. Averaging 56 miles a day, the Buffalo soldiers approached St. Louis, Missouri on July 14, 1897. Much of the trip, this part of the journey was fraught with heavy rains, heat, and mud. After 41 days, 1,000 cyclists greeted the soldiers in the Forest Park. An Army Bicycle Corps can travel twice as fast as cavalry or infantry under any conditions, and at one-third the cost and effort, Moss told the United States Army and the Navy Journal at the time. Over 125 years after the Buffalo soldiers' historic feat, their story remains relatively unknown. Despite harsh environment and social conditions they endured, last year, the Missouri State Park celebrated their contributions with reenactments and exhibits along the historic route. So there's a little bit of black history there for you. Thought that we've got more here, and I will definitely bookmark this and come back because there's just so many cool things that we can talk about. And I got a couple more stories for you, and February is not over yet. So what I am going to do, though, I am going to move on to my next piece here. And let me just go. And we're going to do this so I can save this. And we're going to talk a little bit about the... Just make sure I put this in here so I don't lose it. There we go. We're going to go on to... Here it is, right here. we talked about the love for our bikes. Okay, I'm going to go on to a little bicycle racing here. And then I'll go a little bit into the bike business. So it's the Olympics, right? The Olympics. You know that during the Olympics, during the Summer Olympics, there's a cycling event every single day during the Olympics. Every single day. In the winter, not so much. As a matter of fact, there's nothing. So anyway, Matthew Vanderpoel and cyclocross are now becoming welcomed at the discussion for the 2030 Winter Olympics, but only if the UCI forgoes an IOC revenue. So apparently we'll get a little bit deeper into this, but yeah, it looks like there is a good possibility that we will see cyclocross making it into the Winter Olympics. The other thing that will be going there that has not been done yet is cross-country running. And they're edging closer to a place in the Winter Games, but with major caveat, according to the Olympic promoters. There would be only added for the 2030 edition in the French Alps, as if their governing bodies accept that the IOC will not provide any additional revenue. Boom, boom, boom. All right. So the condition explains much of the resistance that has surrounded the proposal in recent months. While the debate has often been framed around tradition and whether the disciplines truly belong on snow or ice, the real fault line has been financial. Under the current system, the International Olympic Committee redistributes a substantial share of Winter Games revenues to the international federations already on the program, including the International Skating Union, International Ski Federation, and International Biathlon Union. These organizations have made it clear that they do not want the pool diluted by the arrival of new sports governed by bodies outside of the winter ecosystem. According to the committee, these winter federations would be prepared to drop their obligations if the UCI and World Athletics agree not to claim any additional financial compensation from the IOC. Across the peloton, the signals have been mixed when it comes to cyclocross joining the Olympic program. Matthew Vanderpoel, Tadej Pogačar, and Puk Pertis have backed the UCI's push. We asked them to make a video, which we could send to the organizing committee of the 2030 Winter Games and also to the IOC. UCI sports director Peter van den Abel revealed in November. Thibaut Nies, by contrast, has been more cautious. On paper, he should be all in. He is becoming one of the main names in cyclocross, and if the sport reaches the 2030 games, it is his generation that would be in the frame. But he's not sure that's where cyclocross should be heading. I think we should look closer at home and where things are going wrong and try to make the sport bigger in that way, instead of forcing it into the games, Nies said. Earlier reports have stated that the decision will not be taken at the upcoming IOC session this month, and that the saga will instead reach a conclusion this summer. So yeah, maybe we'll get into the Winter Games. That'd be kind of nice. I like that idea. Sounds good to me. Okay, what else we got here? There's all sorts of things going on. Okay, so we're going to move on to right here. There it is. So the if you're a member of the bicycle world here, of the retail world and the wholesale world, and you'll know a lot about an event which has been going on for a really, really long time, and it's called Frostbike. Why? Because it's in the middle of the winter and it's in Minneapolis. So obviously the conditions are winter, very, very much winter. But quality bicycle product president Richard Tao told the industry members who had been planning to attend Frostbike later this month that the distributor decided to cancel the event. I know a lot of people who have gone to this and they say it's just a blast. They really put on a great show, and there's great food and events and all sorts of things going on there. But over the past 6 weeks, they've been monitoring the situation in Minneapolis metro area related to federal immigration and enforcement activity. While we have been hopeful that a significant de-escalation would take place, it does not appear that meaningful change is coming soon. While better days for our community are certainly in our future, the current conditions make it potentially unsafe for some attendees. For that reason, we have made the difficult decision to cancel Frostbite in 2026. The decision did not come easy, and it was not the one we wanted to make, but we recognize if the current enforcement activities make it unsafe for some of our attendees to travel to the Twin Cities, then the event is not safe for all attendees. Tower's email said the company will be reaching out to its exhibitors on the logistics related to the cancellation. Noted that this year's theme for Frostbike, the first in-person event since before the COVID pandemic, was Take the Lane. There's no better example of the power of our industry than taking the lane together than last Saturday's memorial ride honoring Alex Preti, who was fatally shot in Minneapolis by the DHS agents, ICE agents, on January 24th. Angry Catfish Bicycle Shop and the help of the other businesses and local citizens hosted the Minneapolis ride and guided organizers in hosting more than 250 officially scheduled rides across 14 countries and 43 states. In Minneapolis alone, we had over 5,000 riders show up despite the snow and the cold. So that's news from Minneapolis. And I understand, you know, Quality Bike Products, I understand. You guys are awesome. They're probably one of the greatest suppliers of bike products out there. They have a wide variety of product. They're extremely efficient at getting things out to bike shops. They have a great online system. They're what everyone is aspiring to be. Steve Flagg, I believe, was the original founder of Quality Bicycle Products. If I'm wrong on that, you can correct me, but I believe that is correct. And anyway, it's, you know, I've just known about them over the years because I spent 44 years in the bicycle industry. So I'm very, very aware of this company. So it's a shame that they're not going to have Frostbike this year, but they'll have it next year. And the other thing, just a little shout out to Minneapolis. Minneapolis 2 years ago was voted the number one most bicycling friendly city in the United States. And they have winter, and I mean winter, bad winter, like cold, cold, cold winter. And yet they were number one. They have been shown to be out and plowing their bike lanes and just really accommodating cycling in a really, really big way. They're still in the top five. New York's number one as of last year, the end of 2025, New York was voted the number one city. Once again, they have winter. Boy, they've had winter this winter. But I don't think that they're probably paying quite as much attention to clearing of the bike paths that Minneapolis was. Minneapolis was outstanding, and people ride all year round, and they commute all year round in Minneapolis. So a little shout out to Minneapolis and what they're doing for the rest of the world, and that's a really, really good thing. The okay, so other things that are happening in the bicycle industry, seems like there was one other thing that I looked at here. There's 20 Arkansas outdoor businesses sign a letter to support of support for Minneapolis. And that's, if you're not familiar with Bentonville, Arkansas, Bentonville is an amazing up-and-coming cycling mecca funded primarily by Walmart, which it is the home of Walmart, and there's just all sorts of cool things going on in Bentonville. So 20 Arkansas outdoor sports companies, including several bike shops and bike manufacturers, have released a statement in support of the residents of Minneapolis and others who are peacefully demanding the right to live without fear. Ah, a little shout out here from my friends politically in the bicycle industry. Yay, bicycle industry. We're a kinder and friendlier industry, I would say, than some others that are out there. So, other than that, we've got things like Shimano pulls out of Eurobike, but trade groups resume talks. So Eurobike is, you know, we'll see what happens with Eurobike and I will have upcoming news on that as we get closer to Eurobike. Also, something else to keep in mind, which is coming up in the near future, the Taipei Bicycle Show. And the Taipei Bicycle Show is an international show of major consequence, because it is where most of the buyers for bicycle products around the world are checking out the newest items that are being offered from the Asian market. And they're not doing it for this year. It's really for next year. It's that far ahead. So it's like a year after. And then, you'll start to see some of the really cool stuff. But I always like to kind of watch it and see. A lot of times I get reports and videos from the Taipei show, and you get to see some extraordinary cool stuff. You imagine, what more could you do for bicycles? Well, you can do a lot. Apparently you can do a whole lot. So anyway, that's really cool. And of course, I reported on this about 2 weeks ago, I think, talked about a New Hampshire lawmaker who wanted to do a bicycle user fee and put it into legislation of $50 per bicycle user fee. He said now that he expects to amend or drop the bill, which he conceded has little chance of passage as written. Well, glory be. What do you know? So anyway, that's it in the world of the bicycle world, as I know it, and bicycle retail world. And that is bringing us very close to the end of our show. So we are going to go to events. And I'm going to remind you that the date for the 2026 Bicycle Leadership Conference is March 17th through the 20th. That's a peopleforbikes.org production. And it's a leadership conference. It's really cool. If you have some spare time and would like to attend, I'm sure it's wide open. The 2026 Giro d'Italia is Friday, May 8th to Sunday, May 31st. There's already routes that are laid out, and we'll get deeper into that as we go along. The Tour de France in 2026 will be July 4th through July 26th, kicking off the Grand Depart in Barcelona, Spain, including with the traditional finish on the Champs-Élysées. And the Ride of Silence, the 24th anniversary of the Ride of Silence, will be May 20th, 7 p.m. worldwide. I will give you more information about our local chapter of the Ride of Silence, and as soon as I have more information about it and we get our clearance from the town of Mansfield. So, finishing points. Give us your opinion. I'm always interested in hearing it. And remember that bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people, because when more people bike, people are happier, healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet's greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active, our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking that car for a day. Ride your bike instead. You might just surprise yourself. Actually, you will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding a bike or driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran, but she just tapped on my door, so I know she's back. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment down down here below. If you'd like to send me an email, it's bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. And if you'd like to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!